You're listening to the Business for Good podcast, the show where you'll hear inspirational stories about companies making money by solving some of the world's most pressing problems. I'm your host, Paul Shapiro, and I'm glad you've joined us. Welcome, friend, to episode number 137 of the Business for Good podcast. I'm glad to report that the new, updated paperback edition of Clean Meat is now out in the world. The book still tells the inspirational stories of the entrepreneurs, scientists, and investors all racing to commercialize solder-free meat, but I've updated the paperback edition to include recent major debates and events in the still nascent industry, from nomenclature to regulatory approval to scaling challenges and more. I'm told it's a page-turner, and I'd be grateful if you ordered a copy and encouraged your social circle to do the same. Just go to cleanmeat.com to learn more. Again, cleanmeat.com. And if you're listening to this episode, you likely already know that we are in the midst of a multi-part series on cultivated meat. The first four parts of the series featured conversations with Josh Tetrick of Good Meat, Nia Gupta of Fork and Good, Mark Post of Mosa Meat, Isha Datar of New Harvest, and for this fifth part of the series, we've got all the way from Israel, Aleph Farms CEO Didier Tubia. Now, when you think about cultivated meat, Thailand isn't exactly the first country that comes to mind. Sure, you may think about the US, the Netherlands, Israel, and Singapore, but the Southeast Asian kingdom is where Israeli cultivated meat juggernaut Aleph Farms recently announced its first commercial factory will be. Having just received Israel's first regulatory approval to sell cultivated meat, and the world's first regulatory approval for cultivated beef in particular, Aleph Farms CEO Didier Tubia discusses his company's rollout strategy with me in this conversation. As you'll hear, Aleph wants to start by selling limited quantities in Israel within 2024, but the company intends to operate its first plant in Thailand with what Didier calls an asset-light pilot facility capable of producing 1,000 tons a year. Now, for those of you who aren't mathletes, that's about 2 million pounds of finished cultivated meat product annually. Finished meaning finished goods that are a hybrid of animal cells and plant-based ingredients as well. Of course, 2 million pounds may seem like a vast quantity compared to the volume of cultivated meat that has been produced thus far, but it is not even a rounding error in Asia's meat demand, let alone global meat demand. So, how long will it be before Didier thinks that the cultivated meat sector will make a real dent in animal meat demand? You can hear his answer in this episode. Despite negative headlines surrounding the space lately, Didier claims in this conversation that he is more optimistic than ever before about his prospects for success and that he is still fighting to have a $1 billion revenue level within the next 10 years. You can hear him explain why he thinks that's realistic in this conversation. So enjoy this episode and now go get the new updated paperback edition of Clean Meat anywhere books are sold. And again, check out cleanmeat.com.
Didier, welcome to the Business for Good podcast.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be talking with you. I was so honored to have you last year visit the Better Meat Co. with some other folks and get to try some of the mycoprotein products that we're making when we did our Night Under the Fermenters event. But sadly, I have not been able to visit you in Israel and get to try some of the Aleph Farms steaks yet, which I'm very eager to do. I was thinking maybe at FoodTech IL, which I was scheduled to speak at. Obviously, the Hamas massacre prevented that from occurring. But I hope that there will be a time when I can get back over there. Will that be possible, do you think, when I'm over there to try some of the steak?
Of course. Welcome anytime. We love to share our product with sophisticated people like you who are able to provide very focused feedback and always happy to hear good things. You can help us.
That's very kind of you. I certainly don't perceive myself as sophisticated, but I might be able to provide some useful feedback. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Thank you so much. Hey, listen, we had Jonathan Berger from The Kitchen on, who I know is a board member of yours, and we had him on just a couple months ago. And before we get started, I just wanted to comment on something he had said. He mentioned that it was something like 15% of all of Aleph Farms staff is serving in the military right now. And so I'm sure this has taken a very serious toll, obviously, on the company. And I first want to, express my thoughts and say, I'm sorry for the hardship that you guys are facing from the massacre of October 7th. And also wanted to just ask, how is the company doing with so many of the staff not being able to show up for work right now?
Yeah, thanks a lot. Some of the staff which has been drafted to the military came back. And overall, we believe that the current security situation in the Middle East is strengthening our motivation and adding more energy to our vision for making the world a better place. We really hope that the situation will improve, and that cellular agriculture as a whole and cultivated meat in particular will play a role in building back a better Middle East, helping tackling joint issues with food sovereignty and access to nutrition in the region, and better integrating the economies and promoting more stability in the region. So we're sorry for what happens currently and all the pain and suffering happening in the region. And we believe that we will have a role in building it back better.
Let's hope so. Let's certainly hope so. I hope to be able to celebrate with you at Food Tech IL whenever it is rescheduled, apparently for this upcoming November, but we'll find out as time goes on here. But let's talk about some happier things here, Didier, because you guys have done a lot of impressive things, right? Like, first, you've raised hundreds of millions of dollars. You're the only company to have received regulatory approval for cultivated meat in Israel. You're the only company to have received regulatory approval for cultivated beef anywhere in the world. You've partnered with SpaceX to do actual meat growing in space on the International Space Station. There's so many cool things that you have done. But to my knowledge, you have not started selling steaks. So when is that going to happen? You have the regulatory approval. You can make steaks. I've seen them. They look beautiful. When will somebody be buying an Olive Farm steak?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. And thanks for asking it. It's an opportunity to clarify a little bit where we stand. As of now, meaning mid-March, we got our product approval, which is equivalent to a no-question letter by the FDA in the US on the intrinsic safety of the product. This letter has been delivered to us in December last year, and we published it in January, a few weeks later. And we're still working on hand in hand with the Minister of Health to finalize the guidance for the labeling of the product. And in parallel, same as in the US, the USDA also needed to inspect and approve the facility for cultivated meat production. We're also in the process of getting our GMP certification and finalize all the prerequisites for being able to operate our plant fully as a fully commercial facility. So we still need to fulfill some requirements before we can start and market our products, which are more, let's say, technical requirements, not related to the safety of the product. And we expect to launch our cultivated beef steak under the Aleph Cuts brand in the next few months. During the course of 2024.
Wow, that's really exciting. And this will be in Israel.
Yes, it will be in Israel. As you know, we also filed regulatory applications in Singapore and in the US and the UK. In Switzerland, so we're opening additional geographies. There are good chances we could get another approval during the course of 2024. And in that case, we'll probably launch, at least at small scale in a second country as well to gather additional data points and more customer feedbacks. So we'll launch primarily in Israel, but potentially in a second country as well in 2024 at small scale.
Very exciting. And so when you say small scale, like if you look at Upside Foods and Eat Just, what they have done is essentially put their cultivated chicken on one or two restaurants' menus, not every day, sometimes it was even just once a week in some cases, and for a limited number. Is that the type of small scale you're thinking, or are you thinking something bigger than that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good question. We're actually learning, and we really want to make sure that when we launch our product, we have the resources and the capabilities to increase the quantities and support, in the an initial traction in the market, and then to expand our reach to additional restaurants and into the wider food service space. We prefer not rushing and launching early while we're not yet 100% certain we can deliver on the mid and long term. We'd like to avoid launching the product and putting it from the market and then relaunching it. I think it's not doing good for the company. So in parallel to our regulatory approvals, we're also working on our scale-up plans on all the agreements with, you know, which will ensure the quantities and the demand will actually justify the launch and will drive quantitative increase in revenues on the short term. And so to your point, we prefer delaying a bit our launch and make sure that the launch will be successful and ensuring we can deliver not only with the launch event itself, but also in the next 6 months, 1 to 3 years, and show a steady increase in revenues.
Nice. So let me ask you then, you recently announced that you're going to be building a facility in Thailand. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty intrigued by this because Southeast Asia actually has a relatively booming market for alternative meats right now. I was in Thailand not that long ago, and I was surprised that there were 16 different local brands of alternative meat, not like Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, but in terms of plant-based meats, there were 16 Thai brands of plant-based meat. And so it seems like there is a real appetite there. So did that have to do with your decision? So let me just ask you point blank, why Thailand and what are you mm-hmm. building? It's a pilot plant or it's a commercial facility? Like, what is it that's actually going to be in Thailand and why are you doing it there?
We decided to focus first on smaller countries, which require less initial investment to launch and where we can learn and implement iterations and make sure that we improve our product before we move to the US. So we decided to focus on Israel and Singapore first. And Singapore is for us a hub into Southeast Asia. So we do implement a strategy to expand in the region around Singapore, including in Thailand, potentially in other countries in Southeast Asia afterwards. And Southeast Asia in general, Thailand in particular, are interesting geographies for a couple of reasons. First, the expected acceptance of cultivated meat is very high. We performed a market survey with our partners, Thai Union, in Thailand. It was a couple of years ago, which showed 97% willingness to try cultivated meat. It sounds too high. We need to redo it.
Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah. I was going to say, I wonder, was there a translational problem? Like 97% agreement on anything is pretty unlikely. Exactly. But still good directional.
That's one of the reasons. I think it's similar in Singapore, in China, in many other countries. We're not intending to go to China right now, but you know, the openness for novel food is very high in Asia. The selling price of beef is high because most of it is imported. Thailand is not a beef producer. Singapore imports all of its foods, and overall, we prefer focusing on markets and channels where the selling price is initially high, just because we want to maximize our gross margins and get quicker to break even. On top of that, there is no lobbies there, like we've seen in the US or in the south of Europe. No politicization. Everyone is in favor. We have kind of edge-to-edge support from all the governmental agencies, with a strong focus on food security and food sovereignty. There's a vibrant culinary scene with a lot of innovation. We also see a lot of improvements in the talents availability, very good universities and the high availability of talents. The production cost is low and the cost of utilities in Thailand is very low. And at the end of the day, the APAC, Asian Pacific market is much larger than the US. 40% of the world population will be living there soon. So all of that together makes this geography interesting. It's also very open. You know, in the US, there are 100 companies and a lot of the larger companies are in the US and in Southeast Asia, currently with the most advanced company. There is and no one else, especially not with food, a little bit of seafood companies, but not with the meat, I meant, sorry, not with meat and surely not with beef. So the market is very open, no competition. Overall, yeah, I think it's a good place to be. And we'll move into the US and extend into the US in the next few years. We do see the US as a strategic market for us, and it remains a midterm goal to be successful in the US as well.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I look forward to trying your product in the US also. I hope to be able to try it first in Israel, but we'll find out what the fates will hold here. With regard to the Thailand pilot plant, is the idea that you will produce commercially from a pilot plant, or that this is a proof of concept that you are then going to build a larger factory in Thailand or Southeast Asia?
Yeah, the plant in Thailand is not a pilot plant. It's intended to be up to 1,000 tons per year, which is, I believe, 2 million pounds.
Oh, okay.
It's not huge, but to increase our production capacities in a staged manner. And the
great. Well, yeah, thank you for the correction. I didn't realize it was at planning to produce 1,000 tons a year. That's of all cultivated meat, or that's of finished product that is hybridized with some plant-based material as well?
It's of finished products at this stage, and it fits into a roadmap we have communicated about in the last couple of years. At iFarms, we were quite a prudent company in terms of the way we deploy our cash. And as we decided end of 22, when the financial crisis started with increased interest rates and increased cost of capital, to postpone some of our massive capex investments. And on one hand, to take our asset light strategy one step further, Aleph Farms has always been focused on an asset light, capital efficient scale up roadmap. That's why we have today 6 corporate partners. 5 are investors at Aleph Farms, including Cargill and the 4 other ones. And on the longer term, we do intend to license the production of our cells and our products to our network of partners. And we actually decided to incorporate an intermediate stage between our pilot in Israel and this larger and scale stage with a contract manufacturing organization, so CMOs, in Asia, where we actually outsource the production to those co-manufacturers, if you'd like, which enables us to scale up in a more prudent manner, de-risk the scale-up roadmap in terms of financial risk and operational risk, while making sure that we optimize the process as we scale up and make sure that we're not investing in massive production facilities before the process is fully developed and optimized. And so we're really growing step by step, slowly, but I think that's the way to really build the company for the long term.
Great. So I'm glad you emphasized slowly there, because there have been, as you are well aware, a number of obituaries that have been written recently for the cultivated meat movement, including one in the New York Times. It was an opinion piece, essentially saying this is going so slowly compared to what projections may have been 5 or 10 years ago, that some people just don't think it's going to happen, right? The Eat Just factory that they were planning to build in the Midwest of the United States is now on hold. Same thing for Upside Foods. Currently, there's no cultivated meat being served anywhere in the world by any of the companies who have regulatory approval. And so you have these folks who are saying, look, I just don't think that this is actually ever going to happen. So let me ask you a very direct question, Didier. Have you learned anything in your time of running this company that makes you think that maybe it's just not possible? Has there been anything that you've come across you say, actually, there is this one hurdle that I just don't think that we're going to be able to surmount? Or are you as optimistic today as you were when you started the company?
I'm much more optimistic today than when we started the company. I must say, when we started, it was really, really high risk. We started working on Aleph Farms in 2016. We formally registered the company in 2017. And at the time, you know, there were, you know, 4 or 5 other teams working on the topic in the world, including Dr. Erpost and Uma. We had here at the time Supermeat, which was, I mean, it was really the beginning, and I think that the question marks were huge. It was almost impossible to really predict, you know, whether the direction at all made sense and whether what would be the chances of success. I think that after, you know, six, seven years of hard work and huge investment in efforts and creativity, designing around the hurdles and the barriers for scaling up this industry, I feel comfortable now that we have a clear roadmap for building a new category in animal proteins. And I think that we might have underestimated the timelines, especially for the scale up. And I think this is something which we're smarter now than we were 3-4 years ago, even 2 years ago. I think that, you know, the fact that a lot of companies, including Elephants, but also maybe, you know, a dozen of other companies moved toward the pilot scale and production facilities in the last 2-3 years has been instrumental for us all as an industry to better understand the challenges of scaling up the process and what would be required to really make it work on large scale. At Elephants, again, I can talk just for us. I think that we have implemented a lot of improvements in the last couple of years when we've been working in this pilot. We developed an optimized process, which we call Generation 1.2, which is actually basically relying on the same core technology and building blocks, but much more scalable and with a much lower cost. I think other companies are doing the same. So we have today a much clearer view. And the fact that, you know, okay, regarding the New York Times article, you know, Puma and Upside have been very open since day one that the first product which has been cleared by the FDA and USDA are not necessarily the product they he intended to launch at scale. And that I think once this first product has been cleared, there were huge expectations for cultivated meat to become, you know, commodity product the day after overnight and to be available everywhere in large quantities and low price. I think that it was not necessarily in line with Uma's plans. But again, I don't want to talk for other companies. Back to Elephants, we believe that cultivated meat today is at the same point in time where electric vehicles were 15 years ago. And, you know, when Tesla, for instance, started, and again, electric vehicles is today, you know, facing some other challenges. And I'm not saying that, you know, we should compare one to one, but I do believe that there are a lot of analogies. In the mid years 2000s, the electric vehicles were facing upstream supply chain issues with batteries, and there were regulatory issues. For instance, it was not allowed to charge electric vehicles in underground parking, for instance. So they had some issues. They had the high cost structures. The technologies were not yet fully optimized. And they were not able to replicate exactly the same experience or set of attributes as conventional vehicles. And actually what electric vehicles did as a category is to differentiate the product, focus on higher end product to start with, and build coalitions and consortiums to better structure the upstream supply chain, and share technologies and collaborate. You know, Tesla has actually made their patents public and available to everyone, I think, in 2013. Don't get me wrong, but I think, you know, or 1 or 2 years around that, to foster the development of the industry and to accelerate the build-up of the infrastructure for the industry. I think we need to go through a similar path with cultivated meat. And we're working currently on structuring the upstream supply chain, building coalitions, aggregating some of our capabilities, differentiating our products toward more high-end premium products, high quality. I think that the fact that Elephants focuses on beef is an integral part of this strategy. And, you know, it's same as electric vehicles. I don't think cultivated meat will be equivalent one-to-one to the meat we know today. It will be a different product. Most of the first products will be hybrid, as you mentioned. So they're inherently not equal one to one to a whole muscle. And they will have some benefits and a unique value proposition for specific subset of the market. And we're working at Alphonse on a very strict marketing strategy and product positioning, both for direct customers, which are the restaurants and food service players, and for the end users, if you like, which are the diners. So we're going through all that. It will take time to get to 10, 20, or 40% market share of the global animal protein sector, because we need to improve the processes, reduce the costs with economies of scale. We need to build production capacities, but it doesn't mean that there is no opportunity today. I think that, same as with electric vehicles, there will be inflection points in the industry and in the company's valuations as well before we reach a 40% market share.
Let me ask you, Didier, you're saying it'll be some time before you reach 40% market share, but what about something more modest? You think about, let's say, 1% market share. The plant-based meat industry has received drastically more funding and has been around for much longer, and it still is not at 1% market share. Is it your belief that cultivated meat is just going to be so much better from a sensory perspective that it'll happen faster? Or, like, let me just ask you, how long before you think cultivated meat may reach 1% market share? You think it's 5 years away, 10 years away, 20 years away? What do you think?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I think that one of the issues is that we compare many times cultivated meat to plant-based meat. And of course, there's a common ground maybe between those two industries, but I think it's really different because meat is a deep tech platform. You know, at Alphonse, we have 16 PhDs and 15 families of patents. And we have 6 labs working 24/7. And you know, it's really building a new category of animal-based products. It's like building from scratch the dairy industry, if you like. You know, milk actually is one source of animal products from cattle. We're currently building a whole new industry around cells as a new source for animal products from cattle. So it's a huge endeavor. A lot of the plant-based products, again, there were, I think, 980-something companies making plant-based burgers in the world 2 years ago. 99% of those companies were actually primarily developing new recipes or formulation of the same ingredients with the same processes. Again, there were a few more innovative companies, but it was really the exception. So it was very, very low tech and has been actually introduced to the market as a high tech sector. And plant-based is not high tech in 99% of the cases. It is in 1%, okay? But in 99%, it is not. And I don't think that there's a room for that level of funding in so many startups doing more or less the same thing and with no differentiation. It's a CPG play. You know, plant-based is a play by the large food corporations. I don't think startups really have a, you know, it was important, Impossible and Beyond were there to kind of ignite the transition. But on the long term, I think it's the play of large food corporations. Low tech, low margins. Cultivated meat is cell based. It's completely different. So again, the comparison has some limitations. And to your point, we're talking here, like with any transformative technologies, cultivated meat will go through an S curve, meaning that there will be kind of a, you know, it takes the same time to get from 0 to 5%. Market share than from getting from 5 to 50% market share. So I think that it will probably take time to get to the first 1% market share. And it might take, I don't know, 1% market share in the animal protein sector is how much? $15-18 billion in revenues.
I think it's more than that. But probably globally, hundreds of billions of dollars for sure, maybe even closer to a trillion.
It will take time.
So, but again, right. But yeah, so let me then just finally ask Didier, if you were looking at what are the hurdles to doing that, to getting to 1 or 2 or 5%, is it that new technology still needs to be invented? Like you need a better media or much, you know, new types of bioreactors? Or is the technology now actually ready and it just needs capital to scale? Or is it both? So do you have to make new technological inventions in order to actually get to commercial scale? Or is the tech already sufficient and you just need capital?
Yeah, what was really great is that in 2021, there had been a lot of money invested in many enabling technologies, actually, for cultivated meat. You know, among the 130 companies in the space, most of those companies are enabling technologies, making, you know, cheap growth factors or new technologies for bioreactors, for larger scale, low cost bioreactors, or developing new cell lines for something else than chicken. You know, there were just chicken cell lines available. So that we've seen actually a lot of research and development funded in the last 2-3 years in the enabling technology space. And we do see today a lot of technologies available, which were not available before 2021. And of course, today it's more challenging to get funding, but those technologies have been developed already. And I think it's a great asset for the industry. I would say that today I'm confident the technologies exist. I don't see any technology limitation or, let's say, any technological barrier or gap which we need to fulfill. It's really a matter of executing and the funding, but also implementing the right strategy in terms of a right product strategy, right scale-up strategy, financial strategy. It's more than just developing products.
Okay. I also just looked up the value of the global meat market, and a quick Google search shows it to be about $1.5 trillion in terms of global revenue for meat. So it's a long way to go to get to 1% there, for sure.
Exactly. But that's the issue, that the market is so large that it takes time to get to the market share. Elephants has a goal to get $1 billion in revenues in 10 years. $1 billion in revenues is 0.0% market share. It's an issue, you know.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that is an issue. Well, hopefully there'll be many companies in the space that will be billion-dollar revenue companies by that point, but time will tell. Didier, I appreciate all that you're doing. I'm rooting for your success. I hope very much that we get to see each other sometime in person, preferably in Israel at FoodTech.io, but maybe before. So thanks for all you're doing. Good luck in Thailand, and I will look forward to getting to try a Aleph cut steak sometime.
You're welcome, Paul. Thanks for having me, and looking forward to have you testing our product soon. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening. I hope you found it useful, and if you did, please let the world know. Leave the show a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast app and share the episode with your friends. Who knows? Maybe you'll inspire one of them to be in the business of doing good themselves.